Now, stay tuned for Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, a fun and informative green talk radio show that features guests from all over the country who talk about how living green can improve your lifestyle and be fun. Visit Mrs. Green's website, www.mrsgreensworld.com, for more information about her guests.
Hello, Tucson. Hello, world. Happy Saturday, and thank you so much for tuning in today. Hope you're having a great weekend. It is so beautiful to be here in Tucson, Arizona. And for those of you listening from anywhere else, I hope your weather is great. I talked to a friend in Vermont today, and she said it was going to be 28 there, and she was taking her plants in. No need to worry about that if you're within a 500-mile radius of Tucson, trust me. But anyway, we're happy for the sunshine. This is News Talk 790 KNST. I am Mrs. Green, where we make sustainability a fun and informative topic every Saturday, and this is no exception. We're very fortunate to have Dr. Jim Gentile of the Research Corporation for Science Advancement in studio today, and he will be giving us a short history of this, I would call it a brain trust, a treasure in Tucson that is not extremely well known, but they're busy doing the work of changing the future. And there are incredibly exciting events happening this week in our town, all centered around scilog, which is a word that they made up, and it's a cross between dialogue and science. Am I right, Jim?
You've got it.
I've got it. That was not a hard one once I figured that out. So many questions, so little time, so I'm going to get right to it. Thank you, Chapman. Thank you, Fairfax, for sponsoring our show. I wouldn't be here without you. Tohonetsu Park, the big public sale is going on this week as we speak. They have desert-friendly plants. They are an unbelievably wonderful organization, lots of informative, knowledgeable docents out there to help you pick desert-friendly plants, and to me, desert-friendly plants that are pretty because I like flowers. It's going on today as we speak until 5 o'clock and tomorrow from 10 to 4. And take time to visit the park. It's another Tucson treasure that we want to support and keep very economically healthy. I want to give you a little update on Arizona's Greenest Workplace Challenge on the Mrs. Green website. We are getting close to 2,500 votes. And as last week I said, we weren't getting close to 2,000. The people around Tucson, around the state, and now even more around the country are voting. It's a great message for sustainability. It's a great message that people in the country care. So go to MrsGreensWorld.com. Look at all the unbelievable organizations that have submitted, from Intuit to Golden Eagle Distributors to PopCycle and National Bank of Arizona. So take a little minute and get your green on. Go into that website and vote. Next week, I'm inviting you to make it an entire green weekend. It is Green October. So Mrs. Green will be on the road at 5:30 in the morning to do Green October with Jenny and Chris, who is on, they are 92.9, our sister station, and it was packed yesterday at Blanco. People started showing up a little bit after 6 a.m. They have great musical guests. Next week, it's at Montana Avenue. Great food, wonderful people, lots of good information about sustainable businesses, so I hope you'll come visit Mrs. Green. And then Friday night, you're going to have to make a choice, which Jim will be talking to you about, and there are lots of great choices. I am committed to an evening with Doug Fine, who is an author, quite a character. He's nationally known, been on a lot of national broadcasts. His book, Farewell My Subaru, is a riot, and we are having a free event at Tohonetsu Park at 6:30. We're asking that you do bring food for the food bank as much as you can. A couple of cans would be great, but that's going to start at 6:30, and you would really, really enjoy this man. He draws thousands of people every time he speaks anywhere. More info for that, again, at MrsGreensWorld.com. And then the next day is the Green Living Fair, and this is really cool because I did it last year. I did a live remote. It's at my very, very, very dear buddy, Terry D. from the HABA store, which benefits Habitat for Humanity, Palo Verde and Ajo. It starts at 10, and the event is sold out. We had so many vendors that wanted to be there that we had to cap them, and there's a waiting list, so you know that there's certainly a nice crowd of people in Tucson that want to find out things about rainwater harvesting and high-efficiency toilets and composting and you name it. Our buddy Darren Beal from FreeCycle will be there. That's a phenomenon in and of itself with 100, I think they have 1.3 million sites around the world, and it started right here in Tucson. So bring your family, tell your friends. It is a family event, and plan to come and visit everybody there. So that's, we got a lot going on. Dr. Jim Gentile from the Research Corporation for Science Advancement is our guest. And I got through those events pretty fast. I did. We have some time. And I said, I'm going to use my New Jersey talk fast because there's a lot of content in what you have to share with us, Jim. And it's, to me, when I first heard about it, I guess what grabbed me the most is it's another absolutely incredibly positive thing happening for Tucson in Tucson. It is not a public event. There are some public events. But again, the Research Corporation, because I'm a networker out there, and people don't know about what you do. That's not your purpose, is to have a big public presence in Tucson. That's not what you do. But can we start there a little bit before the break of what the Research Corporation, a little bit of history?
Sure. Thank you very much for the invitation to be here. Appreciate it. Research Corporation for Science Advancement originally was called Research Corporation, and it's the second oldest foundation in the United States. Founded about 3 months after the Carnegie Corporation. And the word corporation is in both of those because the word foundation really didn't exist back then. So we've changed it to be a little more explicit what we do with Research Corporation for Science Advancement. It's founded by Frederick Cottrell. And Cottrell was the inventor. He was a chemist out of Berkeley. And he was the inventor of what I like to call America's first green machine. And they say electrostatic precipitator. The EP, the electrostatic precipitator, is in every coal fire smokestack in the world where a country has a regulatory reason and mandate to clean up fly ash and other pollutants.
And tell
people
what that is. When I met you in the hall that day, I said, okay, say that slowly and then tell us again what that is.
Everyone,
and I get it.
Everyone probably has heard of the scrubbers.
The scrubbers.
And that's what it is. It's the scrubber that's in coal plants and coal chimneys. It was invented, it was then patented, it was then produced, and it was then sold. And the proceeds from that machine were put into a trust by Dr. Cottrell, and that trust became an endowment that then led to the formation of our foundation. And that was the early start of it. That was 1912.
And with when you say that was invented then, that's the technology they still use.
It's obviously upgraded and enhanced,
right,
you know,
but
principally it's the same thing. It's really a chemical precipitation that's happening.
And then I think I asked you this, but I'm not sure. I don't remember. What do they do with the particulates that they save from going out into the atmosphere? I'm sure they have ways now to dispose of them, because I know on cruise ships, that's a huge issue.
It's a bigger issue on cruise ships, but they do. And that's one of the problems, actually, though, that I still think environmentally we have, and that's the fly ash ponds that are out there right now.
Right, because you have to do something with what you save from the air.
Right, and so how to best deal with those in an environmentally sensitive way is important.
Right, and in a wonderful way, what you're doing with Scilog is connected. I mean, it absolutely is connected, because our dependency on coal is so strong in this country. And moving forward to solar, which I'm jumping ahead, whirling dervish syndrome right here, I can't help it, but I think it'll be very interesting to tell that. So it's old. The interest is not just in Scilog, and this is one of the things you do. Many other research projects, unbelievable research going on.
Yeah, there is. There's quite a bit going on, and our history is interesting, and we can talk a little bit about that later. We do not fund everybody in the world. We fund early career scientists.
And I love that.
And I'll explain why we choose that target audience.
The great, great, great new minds of tomorrow. This is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST. We are fortunate to have Dr. Jim Gentile of the Research Corporation for Science Advancement.
790KNST.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST, the voice of green, informative, fun topics, and today, incredibly interesting topic about an event that's happening here this week that has, to me, profound effects for the planet. It's been several years in the making. Dr. Jim Gentile from the Research Corporation for Science Advancement is our in-studio guest, and there is so much to talk about, so let's get talking about it. Scilog. You made up the name. Give us the background. Give us the Reader's Digest version of how that came to be.
Thank you. Let me just take a look at the name first, but then I want to go back a little bit as to what the whole process is. So Scilog is merely our way of describing funding science and asking scientists to talk with one another in a closed environment about what they're doing. Dialogue. So putting it together, you have Scilog. And as we were looking for a way of naming this process, I did a Google search when Scilog came up, and it didn't come up. And it was the first time in my life ever since Google's been around that I actually did a Google search and didn't find anything.
That's
so
great.
So it's pretty good. So people should be able to find out about it pretty easily by just Googling Scilog, S-C-I-A-L-O-G. Our target is really to try to address issues of alternative energy, in this particular case solar energy, by funding early career scientists. Now, why is that important? The history of Research Corporation is to identify and fund genius. A quick history. We have 41 individuals who were funded by us at the earliest stages of their career who went on to win the Nobel Prize.
41?
41. And two of those just won the Nobel Prize 2 or 3 days ago, Richard Heck and Eiichi Nagishi, on their work. And so there's a long gestation period between having the innovative ideas and actually bringing them to fruition and then ultimately to that kind of a recognition. There's a big reason to fund those folks. Early career scientists, and by early career, we're talking about, I'm trying not to use age here, because there are so many great women scientists who maybe enter the field a little bit later.
Right.
So what we do is we just define the numbers of years you have in a field.
And early career is not age.
That's early career has nothing to do with age. It has everything to do with just getting off on your own and starting.
Right.
So over the years, for example, when nobody else would fund a young scientist who happened to be working at Clark University in Boston, Massachusetts, Research Corporation found him and did. The name is Robert Goddard, and the discovery was rocket fuel. When no one else would fund kind of an interesting scientist, people might say nutty, because he had an idea about spinning atoms, we funded Lawrence, and he invented the cyclotron, which has turned into all the particle accelerators that we have around the world. And I can go on and on where we've done that. We funded cancer research. We have funded energy research. We have funded basic research in the physical sciences. I should also say that we're funding the Large Binocular Telescope. That's up on top of Mount Graham right now. And we're involved in the funding of the Large Synoptic Survey Telescope, which is going to be put up in Chile. And those are both coming out of the U of A. So that's our history. I have a science advisory board. And that science advisory board meets with me on a regular basis. And some of the people on that science advisory board are people we have funded over the years. Others are just brilliant scientists. Vicki Chandler, who used to be at
Vicki
the University
Chandler,
of Arizona, is the chair
scientist.
Of that.
Yes, and brilliant scientist.
And so she chairs that group. Carol Wieman, who was just appointed by the Obama administration as Undersecretary of Science, directly under John Holdren, is on that group. And we have others. Cherry Murray, who's the Dean of Engineering at Harvard, is on that group. So we talk as a group about where there's an urgent need, where we think small amounts of money maybe being in the few millions of dollars as opposed to the hundreds of millions of dollars can really make a difference.
But let me go back for a minute, because I think that we can't gloss over what I see in terms of Mrs. Green and the view from 30,000 feet, interviewing people from all over the country. You are creating an opportunity for scientists to share their information. And a lot of times I'll have someone on 1 week who is diametrically opposed to the scientist that was on the week before. And I want to say, people, why don't you two get together in a room and talk to each other and maximize the brain trust that's present here with the conversation. So one of the unique features of Scilog to me is what you said in one simple line: we're getting scientists to talk to each other.
Sure. And let me kind of amplify on that, why it's important. First of all, science today is incredibly complex. The problems are big. Solar energy conversion and solar energy and its use is a phenomenally complex area. You can have people working in a number of corridors in that particular area. There's a stream of conferences that occurs across the world called the Gordon Conferences.
Right.
And those have a basic tenet and philosophy. Gordon Conferences can occur in absolutely any area of science. The basic tenet is that people come if they're interested, for example, an area of science I'm interested in happens to be DNA repair. That's my own thing. So you go and you talk about it. But those kinds of conferences oftentimes, while as great as they are and bringing people together, sort of have a cool feeling about them. And people talk and they go away and then they do their own thing. So what we're doing is actually bringing together people that we have funded, specifically with our money, people that are funded through the National Science Foundation, and teams that have been funded through Science Foundation Arizona, and we're bringing them all together under a mandate to talk with one another. And we have interesting rules of engagement that we're going to be able to employ to keep that conversation alive. But then we decided Tucson is such a beautiful city. And it's such a phenomenal place. And you could bring them to La Paloma. You could bring them to any of the resorts around town. And what are they going to do? They're going to just have the wonders of the city at their feet.
Right.
Rather than kind of engage in one another. So as we were thinking about it, I was talking with Joaquin Ruiz, who's the dean over at the College of Science and a very good friend
Tucson
of mine.
Treasure.
Absolutely. And Joaquin is also on my advisory board. And we said, well, let's hold it at the biosphere.
What a great idea.
First of all, the biosphere is one of the greatest symbols of high risk that didn't work. And that's okay.
It's okay.
It's perfectly okay because if you do not take high risk, you will not get high rewards.
Right.
And we
I
want
totally
that visualization.
Agree.
And look what's happened now with the biosphere. It's turning around completely. So it takes time for great ideas to have a gestation. And we want to implant in that people's mind.
Someone had the vision, and I've just recently visited there twice, and I will tell you, it is so worth it. My daughter, who just graduated from USC, and her boyfriend were here, and I said, let's go to Biosphere. We stayed for hours. I mean, it is there just for the public in general, let alone all of the things that Travis Huxman and all of the other people
Absolutely.
There are having held there, the focus is back on there in the scientific community. So go ahead.
Should I talk?
Yeah.
So what's
are we okay?
Are we all right?
Yeah. We just,
all right.
That was just the 5-minute mark. Sorry.
Okay, that's no shovel.
Okay.
So the biosphere has basically a wonderful condominium complex that's out there. So that's where we're going to house it. We can have all of the scientists there. And frankly, it's surrounded by rattlesnakes.
Right.
And there's nothing else.
They're not going off campus.
And they're not going off campus. There's no bars around there. So what we can do is provide them for 2.5 days with a very intimate mechanism to interact. And we have ideas how we can sweeten the possibility of their interacting as we go forward. I'm not at liberty to talk about those right now, but we know we can get them to interact, and we know we can get some outcomes out of those interactions. They will continue in that Scilog conference for a second year, continue in a third year. And in the third year, by that time, we will have introduced not just more scientists into the group, because we'll be funding this every year. We will have introduced individuals that are working with various companies around the world. We will have introduced individuals that are venture capitalists. And starting this year, we're introducing the government. So at the end of this, our goal is to launch these folks on a very important career path that's going to be well-funded, not just with our money, but well-funded by a variety of private organizations and public organizations that are going to try to move this research to the next level.
And it's kind of like the new paradigm. Everything that needs to succeed, the ingredients that I believe are necessary, you cannot have the isolated scientific community and then the public-private partnership if that's not in place. Where are the people with the money? Where are the people that know how to run the business? A lot of scientists don't want to do that. They want to be in the lab being the greatest that they can be at what they're doing. So what about it is closed to the public, which I think is very smart. This is to get the great minds to focus and to engage in the dialogue to get it to the next level.
And it's also to protect the ideas.
Protect the ideas.
Because if you can protect the intellectual property and have people feel safe to be able to share their ideas with one another, knowing that merging of those ideas might actually be more than just additive, you have to give them a good atmosphere where they feel safe to be able to share and move that forward. This really follows a model. About 6 months ago, I was invited by Secretary Chu to sit with him at a small meeting. There were only 9 people in the room, besides Secretary Chu and his chief of staff and others. And Three of the people in the room were venture capitalists. Three of the people in the room were industry leaders from alternative energy out of industries such as ExxonMobil and Boeing, and myself and a couple of economists. And the challenge is how do you bring all those sectors together? We took the challenge, and that's what Sialog is.
And to me, it's like, I hope everybody that's listening there appreciates the hit that I just got, is this is Dr. Jim Gentile sitting here in Tucson, Arizona, talking about what's happening here, and you were invited at the table because of the magnitude, scope, and impact that the Research Corporation
that's
has
right.
had throughout for so many years. And to me, the more I dug, off air, we were talking about it, and I have been involved in raising money for many, many years, so I know the Research Corporation is someone that supports a lot of local events. And then started to dig much more deeply, and it's profound. I mean, it's profound, it's important, it's on purpose. So we have all that going on. We have one more minute. I want to say, give your website now, and then we'll give it again, because there'll be more people that want to know and look it up and know about the public events of which there will be two. So what is your website?
It's just www.rescorp.org.
And it's very content rich. It talks a lot about the other things that you have going on. And your email is on there. There's a profile of the staff that work there. So if you do want to do that. And we will take callers. The number is 520-880-5678. This is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790. Quick break. We'll be right back. Lots more interesting questions about Sialog.
News Talk 790 KMST.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST. In studio guest, Dr. Jim Gentile from the Research Corporation for Science Advancement. And let's talk with Jim. This is what I'm curious about. You have a vast array of topics. There are so many things that you're involved in, engaged in, finding solutions for. Why did you decide to pick solar versus alternative fuel versus algae versus, there's so many things you could have looked at.
Right.
Why solar?
Yeah, that's a good question. Remember, Research Corporation is actually a national foundation.
Right.
We happen to live in Tucson. And we were originally, for the first 75 years of our existence, actually in the Chrysler Building in New York City.
And I remember you told me that my dad worked in that building.
So as we looked at the topic and the themes that we were going to use for Sialog, it was clear we were going to do an energy-related initiative. There was no doubt about it. From talking with Congresswoman Giffords, from talking with all of my colleagues at the University of Arizona and individuals around town, it really became obvious that the concept of converting solar power, the power of the sun, into usable energy that can be distributed in a variety of ways was something that was a national concern, but also a regional concern. It's vital to the region that we're able to do that. So we chose a topic specifically that was going to affect the nation and the world, but it was going to be centered in southern Arizona, which I think has probably as much solar energy potential as the Middle East has in oil potential. And so it just made sense, since we were here, that we were going to do something that really was a Tucson-centric need.
So I think that when you talk about solar, and from my vast knowledge of solar, you know, just a little bit there, I know enough to be dangerous. So I know about solar thermal. I know about solar photovoltaics. That's what people think in terms of their choices right now. That we'll have community solar fields. I think Paul Bonavia is a cutting edge, big picture thinker, knows what the limitations are with the technology now. Where will Sialog take that conversation of those? Am I right in saying right now you can either have photovoltaic or solar thermal?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's absolutely fair. But remember, solar energy conversion also applies to algae, because you're converting sun. In this case, you're converting it into a fuel source. We're not doing that. We're specifically going to be looking at the photovoltaic component, because we decided focus.
If we
wanted to pick the most innovative ideas, we had to compress what we can do and focus on an area. The commercial that was just on was really interesting from the University of Arizona, because they were talking with some great sincerity and at great length as to what they're doing and focusing and concentrating the energy of the sun and focusing it down in photovoltaics. The fact of the matter is that the energy telescope that Roger Angel has developed is a phenomenal invention. Roger just won the Kavli Award, and And I think that what he's doing right now will revolutionize solar energy, just like his mirror production revolutionized astronomy. But it's frying, it can have the potential to fry every solar circuit for capturing it that's out there. Anybody can do Roger's experiment by just taking a very small magnifying glass and focusing down on something, and you'll see what happens.
That's right.
The capacity
it's
to.
What you learn in Boy Scouts and
you
Girl
learn
Scouts.
In Boy Scouts. And the capacity to store that energy in a usable
is
form
everything,
is everything. Capture it and store it. And so rather than think about taking today's technologies, where the efficiencies of these, of solar cells, multi-junction device solar cells right now are getting much, much better, but are still relatively low, and going incrementally from 30% to 33% to 35% to 40%.
Right.
What we're challenging the scientists from around the country to do is give us a leap of faith here. Tell us how we can move things forward in dramatic ways. For example, there's a group that's actually using nanotechnology, essentially the smallest particles one could envision, with virus DNA that would actually be able to move electrons up a multi-junction grid in ways that are very rapid and have the potential to take our efficiencies and move that even forward. Now, that's a long way from that idea to actually being able to put it in the field, but those are the kinds of technologies that we're betting on are going to make a significant leap. I come from Chicago, from the south side of Chicago, and one of the things that I've learned over time, I guess, in a variety of ways is, you know, new ideas are a dime a dozen. So what you have to really do is pick and sort, and we have done that. We had almost $4 million to put into the project. We gave less than half of that because many of the projects that were proposed to us weren't innovative enough.
So what was that process? I mean, just the vetting process for that had to be quite an onerous process to decide which ones you were going to pick to come to Biosphere, because I'm sure there are hundreds of scientists that would love a place at the table.
Absolutely. And so we got the best, one of the best solar scientists in the country to be the chair of the committee. His name is Nate Lewis. He'll be at Scilog, and Nate is at Caltech. I believe Nate just received a $750 million award from DOE to establish a solar center out there.
That's a good number.
And
a lot of confidence there.
And we have some really spectacular scientists on our own committee.
Right.
People, again, like Dr. Wyman and others. And we picked a team of recognized champions in the field of energy research and gave them the challenge to identify and vet and move this forward. We're beyond satisfied with the groups that we have. And what these research projects that are funded now will do is when we go out with our next call, which will go out for another round of funding next year, we'll have some demonstration projects to show people what we mean when we say innovation. Now, they all don't have to work. They're all going to result in tremendous science, and we're going to learn a lot. And the energy field and other areas of science are going to expand because of this. But if only one or two or three are really the big-time winners to move it forward in a significantly jump-started way, then we'll have been successful beyond our wildest dreams.
And, you know, going back to Roger Angel, Tucson never ceases to amaze me. I'm friends with Steve Rosenberg, who is the founder of Biz Tucson, and Roger was featured on the cover issue the last quarter. And I said to Steve, how did you find this guy? Like, I never read about him. He said he found him from a one-sentence article in the New York Times, not in anything written about him in Tucson. And now, of course, he was on the front cover of that. He's gotten a lot more news. But he's another, like, Tucson treasure. I could do a show every day just on the city of the University of Arizona, because there are really lots of people there that are world-renowned that we don't even know that they're in their backyard. And I think he's another example of his technology it already is changing the world.
It is. It's revolutionary.
It's revolutionary. It's a great, and he just, I want to go back to the whole thing about Biosphere, too. People, if they don't take risk and they're afraid of failure, nothing moves forward. They're stuck in jobs that they hate and complain about and don't even want to go to work every day. This is such a creative, content-rich, discovery-rich mindset to keep going.
And let me add, so and this is a it's a It's an opportunity for not just the Research Corporation for Science Advancement, but for private philanthropy and business and to move forward this. We can take the risk. I can take the risk on behalf of my foundation because I am not using public funds. Public funds and federal funds oftentimes are chastised when they take these risks.
Right.
And what happens is then there's a constriction process that goes on. And good science is funded, but it's safe science.
Right.
It's not necessarily science that can move in jump step fashion, leaps and bounds ahead. Private philanthropy can do that. So I think Research Corporation is what I define as a venture philanthropy foundation. So we're a venture capitalist of private funding of science. So we take that risk and we expect high payoff. And again, it doesn't all have to pay off. As long as we can get one or two of those, great things will come from what I would call the ones that won't get the next technology. Tremendous science and tremendous advances. But if we just have a couple of winners, and I'm real sure we're going to have a couple
I'm
of
sure
winners
you're
out
have
of
some
it.
Winners. And you're funding the discovery process, which is everything. I mean, that's the creative minds and not shutting it down. It's a world where everything is possible. And to me, as Mrs. Green, that reads a lot of really bad news about what's going on in our world. When something like this comes up, it's hope, possibility, and change, which is, I think, we'll find it. The next greatest mind has already thought of it and is figuring out a way to bring it to market. Because there's a lot. We got to do a lot in a very short amount of time, if you ask me.
You're right.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the public events.
Sure.
Because I think it would be great to show two of these unbelievable scientists what Tucson cares. When they did the series on the brain and neuroplasticity, it was standing room only. I mean, the Tucson community came out in force. Every one of those events was full. So I would love to have the same happen for the two public events that you're planning this Thursday and Friday. So do you want to talk a little bit about those? I have the information if you don't. And then I just have to make sure I know this man, one of the men that is going to be presenting is – you know, it's I don't know how to do it. I'm prone to hyperbole anyway, but to talk about the respect that he holds in the community. His name is it Arun?
Arun Majumdar.
Majumdar, and he's the director of the U.S. Department of Energy Advanced Research Projects Agency. He's going to talk about energy innovation in the 21st century. So that's huge. And he's so, I mean, I have a conflict and I'm so sad, but Cindy's going to go. So that's Friday, October 15th at 7 p.m. at the Center for Creative Photography. And he will be introduced by Gabby Giffords. And it is free to the public. And I think it's really, we can come after the break, talk a little bit about what he's going to be covering. And then Dr. Eric Mazur, this is the little one, this is one I'd like you to go into a little bit more detail about, because as someone that's trying to bring the message of science, technology, and innovation to the masses, he's going to talk about the make-believe world of real-world physics. That is a complex carbohydrate in my mind, okay? Mm-hmm. And it is open to the public. I think we should talk a little bit about that when we go to break. And the other thing is, I want to repeat, people can find this out about Research Corp, RESCORP.org. Everything is up on my website, MrsGreensWorld.com. And I want to just put out a call again. If you have a question of Dr. Gentile, number is 520-880-5678 or anything about the public events. And I think it's great that you're bringing some of these great minds here and letting the public get at least a taste of what it's like. Everybody that I talk to about this event, and it's been quite a few people, are saying, I'd love to go to that. I mean, I'd really love to go to that, but it's closed. I said, maybe next year. They have to concentrate. Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
790KNST.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST, where we are having another fun, informative, out-of-the-box thinking, hope, possibility, change with Dr. Jim Gentile from the Research Corporation for Science Advancement. Jim, can we talk a little bit more about the public events?
Sure.
And also, we can't gloss over who this man is, like Arun Majumdar. We cannot gloss over him. He is... When I tell people about this, I say some of the greatest minds in the world are going to be gathered at Biosphere for 3 days. And I don't think that's an exaggeration at all, like in the world in this field. So talk a little bit about him, his department, and what it really means to the public.
Right. When Secretary Chu was appointed, when Steve Chu was appointed secretary, one of his ideas, and I think it's a tremendous idea, was to create under the umbrella of the Department of Energy a research agenda that would look like the advanced research technologies agenda that was already created under the Department of Defense budget. The one in the Department of Defense is called DARPA.
Right.
Okay. So ARPA E is the equivalent of highly innovative, out-of-the-box research agendas. And he asked Aaron Majumdar to take the lead and evolve that and develop it. And Aaron has done that. They've had one round of funding now, and they are in the process of having the second round of funding going on. And he became interested in what we're doing because we're going one step beyond what ARPA-E is doing with a lot less money.
Which is blowing my mind.
By having dialogue portion of it,
right.
by having these groups come together. So he agreed to come because he wants to observe and interact firsthand with our scientists. Matter of fact, the only negotiated agreement I had with him when I asked him to come was that he wants to sit at the biosphere and interact with our scientists. He wants to go to the U of A and interact with students. So he will be sitting down with a cluster of graduate students and undergraduate students, with them and him alone. He wants to interact with people from the Southern Arizona solar industry, and so we've arranged for that to happen, and he wants to talk to the public. And in his public talk, what he'll really be expounding upon is where is DOE going to be taking all of this, and what are the visions that they have, and how does SILOG fit in, and how do all of the other funding initiatives fit in. And so it's not really going to be a policy talk, which I think is important, but rather it's going to be a talk for every citizen in Tucson to listen to find out, well, gee, where is the Department of Energy, which is running all the national laboratories right now? Where are they going to take this, and how soon might we get there?
And he is so capable of, to me, providing the information in a way that the masses can understand it. He's not going to be speaking in scientific terms. I've listened to some of the clips. So he's almost like entrepreneurish and just a really unbelievable,
very engaging speaker,
very
down to earth man.
Okay. And in case you just tuned in, or if you want to find out, if you're driving, please don't forget Mrs. Green's World has this up on my website. It's Friday, October 15th at 7 p.m. at the Center for Creative Photography at the University of Arizona. I would very much recommend that you get there early, because I think there's enough of a buzz about this in the community that you want to get a seat and be able to hear and engage in this. And then let's talk about Eric Mazur. This is another one, and I think we could go into this a little bit. It's not as easy a takeaway. He's from Harvard University. He is also world-renowned, and he wants to talk about how physics, which is a word that really people's brain functioning, you know, the flap closes at times for physics. They think it's something that's for really smart people in that field and blah, blah, blah. I mean, truly, it's simple. It's when you throw a ball up. And it's like, so tell us what he will be talking about on Thursday night at the Cooper Space Sciences Building, mm-hmm. room 308. And I think a lot of people listen during drive time, or I know some people listen sitting down, but it's great to come to my website or your website, and it'll be out there. So talk about the make-believe world of real-world physics.
Right. Eric is probably one of the top science educators in the United States, if not the world. He's not only a fantastic scientist. Matter of fact, he is bringing one of his research teams out to SILOG, and they're working on something called Black Silicon for photovoltaic initiative.
Okay.
And he's participating as a scientist with his group. He's also a member of my advisory board. And so when I asked him, by the way, we are not funding Eric. Specifically, my advisory board is out, but he's being funded by the National Science Foundation. And I said, well, as long as you're going to be here, why don't you talk to folks at the university about your science education initiatives? And that's where this comes from.
And it's, to me, very much in keeping with Robert Shelton's mandate. He wants more things at the university, open to the public so that it's not just that's on campus. He really wants more community-based things. Was that your decision to do that? Because I know that you want people to know what's going on. Or was it part of the partnership and the awareness that this needs to become public information, and I'm happy that there's going to be information so people can get a little taste of how proud we should be.
No, absolutely. It was my decision, but that we were going to have him do this, but it was obvious then a partnership with Robert and the rest of and Joaquin and the rest of the university to hold it there. It made much more sense to have it in a central locale in Tucson, such that it's available. Likewise with the public lecture of Dr. Majumdar, by having it on campus, again, it's centralized. People can get there easy. The biosphere is a tough place to get to, even if it was wide open. But what Eric does is he teaches physics in the most elemental ways, in the most common ways. And the best thing I can think about as an example is for any of our listeners, maybe that have gone to a University of Arizona football game this year.
Or that are heading there.
Or heading there now.
I'm going tailgating right from here.
I'm heading right from here. I've got a tailgate waiting me.
That's right. And thank you for taking the time out, because it's big time.
That's okay. And on the scoreboard at various times throughout the games, they talk about the physics of football and are able to really talk about what is happening in football in physical terms that would emulate what's really happening with a physical principle. You can talk about gravity all you want, for example, in a class, but all you have to do is throw a ball in the air and watch it fall, and you can understand a lot. And what Eric is able to do is take that to an important level. What he uses is the same concept that we are using in Scilog. He uses class dialogue and no lecturing. It's all ways of getting the students to interact with one another, to talk about the challenge, whatever that challenge might be in physics, to actually decide on as a group, well, this is what I think is happening, and then allow them to vet for themselves various ways to sort out fact from fiction.
And my old background is in health and human services. So that's utilizing the maximization. To me, it's the maximization of multiple intelligences. Sitting down and having a lecture is not the way that lots of people learn. So this involves a lot of other ways, the dialogue, the auditory, and on and on. We have a call, Kat. Okay, let's go. Thanks for calling in. Do you have a question for Dr. Jim?
Yes, I just was wondering as a question concerning if there's any particular sciences that the Research Corporation prefers to work with rather than such as, you know, are you interested in plant sciences, or do you try to stay away from that or go to particular areas?
No, that's a good question. Thank you for it. And it's an important question. We, just because of our heritage and because of the founding commitment we had in our charters, what we do is we tend to fund in the physical sciences very broadly defined. So, for example, people working on a problem in plant physiology relative to the biochemistry of plants to solve some kind of a problem, mm-hmm. That's physical sciences. What we probably would not welcome a proposal in might be a plant taxonomist, for example, using classical ways of plant taxonomy, looking at leaf shapes to try to make judgment calls between species or something. So any kind of research that really touches upon an aspect of the physical sciences that we can look at and we can justify falls within that charter is eligible.
So as an example, if there was a wonderful idea to be able to help improve ethanol production, that would be something that you would consider and look at the science behind that.
Yes. Yes, sir. Okay.
Great question.
One real quick last question, that is there any particular type of scientist that you're searching for? If we know of somebody out in the public knows of somebody, do you prefer feeling like it's coming from your board, or what happens if somebody says, I know of a great idea?
No, that's really good. No, we issue an RFP and it's open to anybody. And then the other thing is, if someone has an idea they want to bring to us, the one thing that we really look at is where are they in their career stage? So if there's someone as old as I am, we would probably congratulate them for getting there, but we might not welcome an opportunity. But boy, the students that they may have generated who are now off in their own careers, Those are the kinds of folks we're looking at. So we're looking at people that are anywhere between the beginning of their career in a university to about 8 or 9 years into that career.
And what I love, and I don't know if you heard this earlier, that it's not their age, it's where they are in their career. So someone could start their career at 50 and be 57 and really be coming on something great, and you're going to take a look at that. Age is not the factor.
And I have to add, and this will help, is that we have to fund a university base. That's by charter. If a scientist were to come to us and she were to have a collaboration, let's say with industry or someone in another nation or something like that, that's okay as long as our funding goes through a university center.
That's a very good thing to
call. Is there any one particular person within a research corporation that we would contact if there was an interest along this line?
Contact me, and I will distribute it accordingly internally based on what the idea is.
And we thank you so much for calling. We're going to run out of time, but I'm going to tell you, if I was funding new ideas and Jim Gentile came up with one, I would fund it. So that's my final say. This is Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, News Talk 790 KNST. If there's anything you want to know about the broadcast, please contact me at Mrs. Green's World and see you make it a great green weekend and all of the activities next week. Get engaged. Get your green on.
You've been listening to Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream on News Talk 790 KNST. All about learning that going green can be fun. Visit MrsGreenGoesMainstream.com and tune in next Saturday at noon for Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream on News Talk 790 KNST.